In these days of intensifying social media connections, a lot of people are wondering what is happening to our personal interactions and how people communicate one-on-one. This is Lisa Berry, and a local leadership communication teacher will be sharing his insights on that and other similar matters when he speaks to the Rotary Club of Ann Arbor North. So we'd like to welcome to 89.1 WEMU, Michelangelo Caruso. Welcome, Michael.
Hey, Lisa. How are you?
Good. You've spoken all over the world, but you're a Michigan man, correct?
I am. I am local. I am not officially a teacher, but I guess that's a nice compliment, man. We do turn people on to a lot of communication strategies and ways they can deepen their relationships.
Well, one of the things you'll be talking about to the Rotary Club in Ann Arbor is how to engage someone in 15 seconds. Care to give us a preview?
Absolutely. The 15 seconds, the first 15 seconds, sets a tone for the entire relationship. And if you think about it, you certainly meet somebody for the first time, but you also see them a second time, a third time, a fifth time. Imagine working in an office where everybody sees the manager come in for the first time that day. Everybody says, is he in a good mood today? That's the first 15 seconds, man. And there are things that you can do, anyone can do in the first 15 seconds to put you in good stead with the other person. Easy stuff, like walking into the room with a smile, mastering something I call the perfect handshake. And, of course, nothing succeeds like showing interest in the other person. In fact, I say that when you show interest in others, others will show interest in you.
How do you achieve the perfect handshake?
Well, the key is this fleshy area between the thumb and the forefinger, the first finger. It's called the web. And when you have web-to-web contact, you have what's called a firm, assertive handshake versus, say, the dead fish or the bone crusher handshake. I'm sure you've experienced both of those.
So you have analyzed it down to that webby part between your thumb and your forefinger. If those touch, that's a success.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. And you know what got me to it was I was studying how men in particular shake hands. If you watch men shake hands in a public restaurant or a public place, they say something like, it's good to see you, but men are terrible with eye contact. They actually look away from each other when they shake hands. So they say one thing and they do another. And this is that delicate area where in the first 15 seconds, you don't want to establish this incongruity. That won't serve you well.
Well, that is good to know. I'm going to keep that in mind next time I shake somebody's hand. I feel like you really got to get in there, though, to make it happen.
Just one signal. There are two types of signals that we trade communication with. One is called verbal, and that's what we say. And the other is nonverbal, and that's what we do. And the nonverbal is much more important than the verbal. In fact, if you think about people, like I teach presentation skills, that the average person, when they rehearse a presentation, they rehearse the verbal part of it. Nobody ever stands up and says, okay, when I say this, I'm going to do this with my left arm, or I'm going to walk to my right. And yet, it's what you do and how you stage it that makes you hyper-believable in a presentation format. So I find this stuff fascinating, and when I isolate these little, I work like a comedian in bits, and when I isolate these little bits, I find that I can really get people's attention and help them improve their relationships.
One of your other areas of expertise is keeping body language from working against you. How does that work?
Well, there are names for certain body language, body positions that are good for you and some aren't so good for you. You can imagine someone that you're talking to, when you say something and they cross their arms, what they're sending you a signal that says, I don't approve of what you just said, or I don't like what you just said. In a negotiation environment, it's like tipping their hand, you know, and if you pay attention to these signals, you can negotiate a better deal. Of course, that's an obvious one when someone crosses their arms, but what happens when they look up and to the left versus up and to the right? We know from behavioral sciences, that someone who looks upward and to the left, accessing what's called remembered and eidetic images, they're probably telling you the truth, but someone who looks up and to their right are accessing constructed images, and they could be fitting. So the devil is in the details, and when you're really, really good at reading people and thinking on your feet, that 15 seconds in particular can become a very powerful moment in time.
We're talking to Michelangelo Caruso, who will be speaking to the Rotary Club of Ann Arbor North Thursday. He's a leadership communication teacher, and we're talking about body language. What about eye contact? I know some people who, like, look right into your eyes. Is that a good thing?
Well, we like what's called sustained eye contact, but if you overdo it, you resemble a sociopath.
So how do you know what's the right balance?
And someone said that Mark Zuckerberg's kind of interesting to talk to because he doesn't blink very much. So there's something about the natural flow and rhythm, how do you know what's too much? I think just monitoring social mores and what might be a reasonable range of acceptable behavior. And some people, of course, work with coaches to get the same effect.
I spoke at the beginning of our interview about social media and how people are having less and less social interaction. Do you think that's a problem?
Yeah, I think so. There's a more inclination these days to what's called one-way communication. If you think about things like texting, Facebook messaging, where you put a message out there and like all the context is gone, right? There's no physical cues. There's it's strictly the words that you use. It's so open to interpretation. And if you're using humor, that could be lost. And it's especially true with young people who don't care to have the conversation much anymore. I mean, a lot of us are treating conversation like we get charged for it.
Hmm. Well, in many cases we do. But I also think that young people are losing the skills of being able to read another person or to interpret their body language.
Yeah, I think that's true. I don't know if we're less patient than we used to be, or it's just sexier to text and Snapchat and do some of the things that we do, Instagram. One thing's for sure, if you can keep that skill set in place for yourself, you become more valuable, I think, to society and perhaps more valuable to your employer. So I wouldn't abandon those skills just yet. I think they're going to come in very handy here in certain ways.
Something we need to be talking to our children about for sure. You're also going to be talking about leadership. If you could give us your one main leadership lesson, what would that be?
Well, leadership it's important to motivate people. It's important to understand the two levers that get people to perform. Aristotle wrote about it first, and then Freud later. Freud called it the pain-pleasure principle, is that two things motivate people in general, the anticipation of pleasure and the avoidance of pain. And to be able to understand that hot and cold water faucet and how it works with people. I'll give you a quick example because some of the listeners might think, well, it's not right to motivate people by pain. But what if they like it? You know, in school, we all had the chance to do something called a term paper. And many of us chose to work on that term paper the night before it was due. We even had a name for it. It was called the all-nighter, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you could make an argument that people who didn't work on their term paper all term but chose to work on it at night, the night before, actually like the pain of that deadline. And if they became that kind of person later in life, if a manager or a boss or a supervisor recognizes that you work better under deadline, you work better when you're uncomfortable, then he'll start treating you like that. So these have large, far-ranging ramifications about how we teach people to treat us, all through the communication and the signals that we trade with folks.
One of my favorite phrases, we teach people how to treat us.
Yes.
Michelangelo Caruso, we will put more information on our website, WEMU.org, about your appearance before the Rotary Club of Ann Arbor North. And we thank you so much for joining us on 89.1 WEMU.
My pleasure, Lisa.